Oh, yes, you do have it. Mark 1. Let's see, we got down to 35. Mark 1:35, Lexi. Mark 1:35. Nana taught her to have the quiet voice. We were teasing Judah when we were in Belgium because he was speaking so loud. We said, Judah, you got to learn to have a quiet voice. And then Jan taught Lexi how to do that. So if Lexi can learn the quiet voice, so can Judah. But it's kind of funny. Judah, Brent is like in charge of the sports on the NATO base. Is it? Yeah, the NATO base. So he has to be like at all the ball games. He's umping. And he got hit with the ball 3 times. And he think he broke his clavicle. But Judah goes up to the plate. Won't even swing the bat. Finally, he swung the bat and got a hit, and Vivi ran home. So it's a good day for him. So Mark 1:35. Let's go and pray. Lord, I do ask you to help us understand these words. Help us to be faithful to them. In Jesus' name, amen. When you read through the Gospels, you try to develop word pictures in your mind. And you try to develop the maybe the environment or the layout where Jesus was ministering. And if you take a trip to Israel, a lot of times, like the first one I took with Ron Wyatt, the Christians, you know, they get kind of, you know, ooh and ah, I'm where Jesus walked, as they read from fake Bibles, which kind of annoyed Ron Wyatt. And it's not so much that you're walking where Jesus walked, it's that you're listening to the words that Jesus said. Now, it does help, I do believe, that if you can kind of see the terrain and the layout, it is beneficial. And, you know, I've taken a couple trips over. That is beneficial. Now, you don't have to spend the money. If you got pretty good internet access, get on Google Earth. Okay, and then put in the location, and then you can kind of zoom down, and you can see, like, the what it looks like today. Of course, Google Earth is never in real time, okay, because it's not done by satellites, it's done by triangulation. But still, the idea, when I was in Florida years ago, preacher for a church down there, in Port St. Lucie, and behind the hotel where we stayed, there were 8 Google cars with cameras, and they would, about 5 of them, take off in the morning, and they'd travel all over the place taking pictures, because that's how they do it. It's done by the cell towers. It's not done by some mysterious thing up there. It's done by the cell towers. So that's how, and that's why if you look at your property on Google, it's never in real time. It'll be, it depends when the last time they took a picture from a plane. Okay, but you can do that for Israel. And maybe one time I'll just kind of bring my laptop and that kind of show. And you can see where Moses went. There's a place in Saudi Arabia called the Springs of Moses. So you can see that area, you can see what it's like. And here in this context, we could go up North Israel into Galilee. You can type in that. You can type in Capernaum and then see the structure there that the Catholics have commemorating Simon Peter. Okay, and then you could see the synagogue that they put stones here and there. This is where the Jewish synagogue was. And then you could travel up to Chorazin, a desolate place up there. You can type that in. And it's really handy. It's really neat. And so you can kind of see the, you know, the terrain and everything. And in essence, when you're doing that, you can read through your Bible and you could, in essence, walk with Jesus. And that's what's nice about being able to do that. So we're down to Mark 1:35, where this is new. This is where I left off last time. And there was places where he and the apostles would go to relax, okay, or to fellowship. Usually it would have been the Mount of Olives. And the reason why they had to do this is because if you had the capability of healing people, raising them from the dead, giving sight to the blind, giving hearing to the deaf, and all the ailments, people would be flocking to you from everywhere. You would have not a time to yourself. There would be a massive crowd of people, like the one woman where she just touched on his clothes, thought she could be healed, and she was. And so this shows that the fake healers on TV are absolutely that. They're absolutely fake. And so there's a time when you're around all these people that you have to get away. And so that's what he did with the apostles in Mark 1:35. And in the morning, rising up a great while before day, he went out and departed into a solitary place and there prayed. So he's alone with God, praying, and the apostles be around there also. And so verse 36, and Simon and they that were with him followed after him. Okay, so they're going to the general area. They know where he likes to be alone. And then it says, and when they had found him, they said unto him, all men seek for thee. If only that is true in a spiritual sense. Okay, why did these people seek after Jesus Christ at this time? Okay, if you would, John 2. John 2, 23, and the last three verses of chapter 2. So it says when he was in Jerusalem at the Passover, so the camera goes down to Jerusalem, different time, different place. In a feast day, it's a Jewish feast day, many believed in his name, and when they saw the miracles which he did, but Jesus did not commit himself unto them because he knew all men and needed not that any should testify of man, for he knew what was in man. So why did these people come around Jesus? Is because they felt that they could be healed. Nothing wrong with that. Okay. But they had an interest because of the physical conveniences. And of course, the Bible will provide some of those physical conveniences. I wonder how many people experienced his miracles, possibly were in Jerusalem, possibly getting caught up in the mob scene, possibly crying out, crucify him. I wonder about that. Okay, but to still the general idea in verse 24, why is it that a lot of people read the Bible and they don't seem to get much out of it? Is verse 24, Jesus did not commit himself unto them. He will open up the words of God to the ones who sincerely want the words of God in order to please him. And so that still holds true today, verse 24, more in a spiritual sense. So verse 37 of Mark 1, all men seek for thee. If only they did for spiritual reasons. Okay, for all men seek for thee. And he said unto them, let us go into the next towns, that I may preach there also, for therefore came I forth. There are several reasons why Jesus came to earth, born of the Virgin Mary, and then lived a sinless life. But there are several reasons he came. And one of them here, he said, is because I've come to preach the word. That's one reason. Okay, chapter 2, verse 2 says he preached the word unto them. So that's at the end of the verse. So that's one reason why he came. Luke 19:10 says that he came to seek and to save those that are lost, them that are lost. That's another reason. In John 8, when Pilate, poor old Pilate, boy, was he caught in a trap or in a conundrum with his conscience. He was trying to set Jesus free. He said three times, I find no fault in him. But the political pressure put on him from the Roman authorities, from the people, from the media, he was doing all he could to get Jesus out of his court case. And in fact, one time he thought he found a way. You're in the wrong jurisdiction. Sent him over to Herod, and here he comes back to him. And poor old Pilate and his wife sent him a little note while he's in the courtroom setting. And he sent him a note, have nothing to do with that just man. I've suffered many dreams. And Pilate was seeking all sorts of ways to get him out of there. He just couldn't make the move to do it. Okay, and when the Jews said, you're not a friend of Caesar, how many people don't believe in Jesus because they are afraid of what their family says? They're afraid of what their friends say. They're afraid of their colleagues. Okay, and there's a fellow that I'd kind of struck up a friendship to when he was in jail, and he owned a bar at the time, and he liked to drink some of his own product. And so he was in jail for a while, and he was doing penance, he was fasting, you know, trying to do all that. And we struck up a friendship, and we're still friends today. And he mentioned to me, he said, boy, when I get out of here, I'm coming to your church. Never did. Never did. And I know the pressure. The pressure. Family pressure. What's going to happen if I believe in this? Maybe people would experience something like Julian is experiencing. Raised in a Jehovah's Witness family. Family's debating about kicking him out because he's not in the faith. Okay, and there's a lot of struggles that people go through. A lot of some preachers who discover maybe their Bible's not as pure as they thought it was, but they're afraid to come out for the King James Bible. Oh, that Hoffman guy, that nut. You know, I don't want to go that far. And there's some people that, and I know in Rensselaer, for at least the first 15 years there, I knew I could probably name five men that wanted to attend our church, but their boss, their wives, said, no way, we're not going there. And I knew, you know, they wanted to, but no, to keep peace in the family. And so it's a tough thing. Pilate had a tough thing. Now, when he mentioned to Jesus, he mentioned in John 18, what is truth? And then walked out. He didn't wait for the answer. That's one of them hit and runs. You see a lot of those hit and runs when you're on the sidewalk. You're like, one guy just did that at Rensselaer Tuck last night where he's going right by me and I'm looking right at him, and then he gets over there and then he yells. Way over there. Over there he yelled. He should have yelled right there. So I could have, you know, he could have helped me out. What a blessing he was to me. Fortunately, I didn't see any Hawaiian salutes last night. You know, Rensselaer, you don't see too many Hawaiian salutes. But, that's a hit. That's called a hit and run. Okay, where they hit you and take off. Okay, and so, but the Lord's going to work on their conscience. I know he's doing that. So in verse 38, Jesus came to preach the word. He came to bear witness to the truth. He came to seek and to save that which was lost. He came to fulfill the will of God. That was his extreme priority. So he came for many reasons. Okay, and in verse 38, he's going into these little towns up there in North Galilee. So you're going from place to place, coming along the shore of the Sea of Galilee, coming across the northern part up by Bethsaida and Chorazin up in there. And then he goes over to Nazareth, where he was raised. And there was a place over there where the Witch of Endor is kind of a location. And the Jewish guide, I think we went by that place three times. And he said the same joke, the Witch of Endor, that's where my sister-in-law lives. And so he's trying to pass that off. Okay, and so verse 38, he said, we got to go to the next towns. 39, he preached in their synagogues throughout all Galilee. So that'd be like a local, like we have out here, the Grange. Okay, and the Granges are kind of dying, I guess. But the Grange is a community building. Okay, and so they had synagogues where they would gather. I don't know how they chose who was going to speak, if somebody just came in. And so he preached in their synagogues throughout all Galilee. So this is all northern Galilee. So it'd be like he would go to Hebron. In our area, he'd be going to Hebron, and there'd be a little synagogue. He'd preach there. Then he'd go down to Rensselaer, and he'd find a synagogue. He'd preach there. Belinda just told me that some illegal aliens, three packs of illegal aliens, one was dropped in Rensselaer, one was dropped in DeMott and Wheatfield. And something's going on in our country where these illegals are young military-aged men coming from multiple countries. Something's going on here. And so there's just one in Idaho where he's 18 and he was going to try to, you know, blow up a couple churches, and the FBI happened to catch the dude before he got the job done. But things are stirring the pot, aren't they? Stirring the pot, that's for sure. And we got us a perfect book that shows us the Lord's going to win in the end. So, okay, so he preached in their synagogues throughout all Galilee and cast out devils. So that would have been an unusual sight, because devils are religious. They're usually a fundamentalist of some type. They believe in the deity of God. They believe in the deity of Jesus Christ. Okay, and so all this would be manifested in the synagogues. In verse 40, and there came a leper to him. Okay, and of course, everybody knows what they had to do with lepers. They had to, you know, separate from others and say unclean when they're out in the public. And there came a leper to him, beseeching, begging, pleading, and kneeling down to him. Wow, won't that rip your heart out? And saying unto him, if thou wilt, thou canst make me clean. If you wilt, thou canst make me clean. Jesus, moved with compassion, put forth his hand and touched him and saith unto him, I will, be thou clean. Boom, just like that. That's the Lord. And so I know in India, there's a leper colony there that a missionary lives in the leper colony trying to help the lepers. And leprosy is an unusual disease. Some, you know, you have different ideas of what it is. He, from living there and studying it, he came to the conclusion that leprosy was the deadening of the nerves, where they couldn't feel. And from his conclusion, he said, for example, there was a 10-year-old boy. He was trying to open his doorknob and couldn't get it done. It was hurting his hand. And the little kid came and just turned that doorknob, even to the point where his hand was bleeding, didn't feel it, and he got the door open. And he come to realize that often when they'd have appendages missing, it's because a rat would nibble on their hand or finger at night and they wouldn't feel it, and it's gone. And they would maybe sprain an ankle, but they wouldn't feel it, so they would continue to walk on it. Then gangrene sets in. And so that's kind of what this gentleman felt about it. And, you know, I don't know all that's involved with that, but it's a tough disease. So in verse 42, and as soon as he had spoken, immediately the leprosy departed from him and he was cleansed. Notice, no long delay, no bringing him in front of a congregation, nobody in the back investigating the prospective healees, the healed ones. Okay? No, it was no big show, no breathing on him. Just boom, right like that, done, taken care of. And that's how the Lord took care of it. And boy, don't you know, after that happened, people talked. Now, what he said to the one who was healed, the leper, verse 42, he straightly charged him and forthwith sent him away and saith unto him, see, thou say nothing to any man. Wouldn't that have been hard? Now, why did the Lord do that? It's most likely because these people have rejected him, and so he's starting to withdraw from them. And that leper, man, when he was told that, first thing he thought of is go to see his brothers or sisters or his parents. Look what happened to me. Look what happened to me. But there he says, see, thou say nothing to any man, but go thy way. Show thyself to the priest. Okay, show thyself to the priest. I've been reading through the 1611, my replica, and I'm up to Leviticus 13, and it's kind of tough reading through Leviticus 13. That's about the leprosy. We got to examine it, and you got this, and you got that, and you got this, and you got that. I started going through it this morning, and I got sidetracked looking at something else, and so I got to get back to that Leviticus 13. There's two chapters, Leviticus 13 and 14. Whew. And the Lord's got it there for a reason. So he says, show thyself to the priest. Now, this priest would have known. So what did the priest do after that? Did that priest go and seek Jesus out? We won't know. Well, I guess we'll find out at the white throne when the Lord kind of shows this stuff. So he says, show thyself to the priest and offer for thy cleansing those things which Moses commanded for testimony unto them. So obviously he'd go back to Leviticus 14, read what he wanted him to do. But notice what this guy did. He went out and began to publish it much. That man, that's a normal reaction. You know, it's like the blind fella. He was an adult, blind from his birth. And in John 9, and he gets healed. He goes back to mom and dad, saw him for the first time in his life, put his hands all over their face, hugging, crying. And then he comes back, and the Jewish authorities start to bomb him with questions. Who did this? And what are you doing? Rah, 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 rah. And he's like, "What? Shouldn't you be happy for me?" You know, and that's very similar to some folks. When you get your eyes opened, you're excited about it. And we tend to think that other people would be excited with us. And they already got their blinders ready to put them back on your eyes and say, no, I would keep these things off. And they want to keep the blind. And what that is it's like if you're out in a bright light, and you walk into a dark room, your initial reaction is, oh, it's too dark, you know, or I'm sorry, reverse that. If you're in a dark room and then you step out in a light room, your eyes haven't been, and you want to go back into the dark. And that's what happens with the word. So he published it. He went out, began to publish it much and to blaze abroad the matter insomuch that Jesus could no more openly enter into the city, but was without in desert places. So he's out in remote areas, and people are hunting him down. Okay, and they came to him from every quarter. So this is still up Galilee. So up north Galilee, that would be like, from Lake County, Porter, Newton, Jasper, maybe White, maybe what's Carroll County down there, a little further. Maybe that's about the general area size. And so, yeah, news spread fast. Okay, chapter 2, and again he entered into Capernaum after some days. And Capernaum is along the Sea of Galilee. It's on the western shore of the Sea of Galilee. What is there today is a building owned by the Catholics because they believe that's where Peter was born. And so they have some type of a building there to commemorate that. There's the synagogue. What I mean, the synagogue, is the stones that were used to have the synagogue 2,000 years ago. And so they kind of stacked them up in order to this is where the synagogue was. There might be one more building, but that's it. Okay, because later after this, the Lord is going to place a curse on that area, that Capernaum. And it's still true today. And he does the same with Bethsaida and Chorazin. Bethsaida, I don't even think there's even a replica of anything left there. It's just like a crossing in a street. And Chorazin is like a national monument. It's out in the middle of, on the side of a mountainside. There's absolutely nothing there. It's just they have some rocks stacked here. This is where the synagogue was. This is maybe where a house was. And that's it. And if anybody wants to try to disprove the Bible, you know, get a construction crew and go on over there and see what you can do. And that would be a great testimony for the Lord. After a few guys fall down the scaffolding and you know, maybe the Lord changes. You know, that the Tower of Babel would be so funny. Has anybody ever listened to Ruckman's Ad Lib commentaries? Paul, did you listen to the Tower of Babel one?
I don't remember.
That one. Oh, it's hilarious. Joey was, yeah, that's so funny. Mike, did you listen to some of his? Oh, the lab. I think the Ad Lib, I think I've listened to them 100 times. Usually when I'm doing something, I'll have them playing in the background. And so what it is Ruckman is just telling the Bible in story form from memory. And then he puts sound effects in there. He did it like in his trailer in the back of his property. But the Tower of Babel, right when they changed the language, he said, one guy says, and he said, I said, ask for a hammer. And the guy that heard him said, hit me in the head with a hammer. So he, boom, hit him in the head with a hammer. And so then all things went crazy after that. And so it's real funny. I like the one part where Jonathan the armor bearer. Okay, Jonathan the armor bearer, we're going to fight the Philistines. And Jonathan made the deal. If they say, come up hither, we'll go up. If they say, don't, then they'll come down or something like that. And so Jonathan yells up to the Philistines. He said, I'm going to say something to them that's going to set them on edge. And so he yells up, Martin Luther King was a fake. And then Philistines say, hey, there, boy, you come up here and we'll show you a thing. So he puts in the racial tones in there. It's kind of funny. It would not be legal on the radio anymore. But it is hilarious. I mean, just hilarious. So, okay, so chapter 2, verse 1. Again, he entered into the Capernaum after some days, and it was noise that he was in the house. And straightway, many were gathered together, insomuch that there was no room to receive them. No, not so much as about the door, and he preached the word unto them. Okay, and they come unto him, bringing one sick of the palsy, which was born of four. So they were carrying, four guys were carrying him. And when they could not, come nigh unto him for the press. Now, that's a funny thing. You know, this would be a stretcher, but you know, see how that's written? You can't come nigh to the truth because of the press. You know, just a little comical thing there, right there. You know, we know it's not talking about, but he's talking about a press of people. Okay, but still, be like, you know, Mo and Larry, where they had the press buttons, and then Curly had the pull button. You know, I don't know if you ever saw that one. He got it out of the bathroom, press, pull. So, okay, so we got that. Now here, it says they uncovered the roof where he was, so flat roof, and so they could break it open. Okay, and when they had broken it up and let down the bed wherein the sick of the palsy lay, when Jesus saw their faith, whose faith? The sick person? The four. He saw their faith. So he saw their faith by their works. And, of course, this is still an Old Testament doctrine. Okay, and so when he saw their faith, he said unto the sick of the palsy, son, thy sins be forgiven thee. Evidently, that physical ailment was caused by a sin. Now, that's not always true, but in this case, there was something in this person's past, a sin of some type that he reaped it in a physical problem. Okay, and so this is why the psychosomatic makeup of a person is just amazing in the creation of God, where our physical, spiritual, mental, emotional are all interwoven, and it's just fascinating. As Ephesians says, compacted and fitly compacted. Okay, and so this is an unusual case. It's like the lie detector test in the Old Testament. That would be Numbers, I think, 5 or so, in that range. Okay, where if a man had a spirit of jealousy come over him, okay, a spirit of jealousy where he was untrusting to his wife. Now, I know a lot of times that could be in the wrong way too, but he felt that his wife wasn't faithful to him. So this spirit, and it shows you that in the fornication world, spirits are involved. And so he was suspicious of her. And so the lie detector in the Old Testament was you take her to the priest, and he has a drink of some type, a mixture of some herbs of some type. The Bible doesn't say what it is. And he tells her that we're going to have you drink this. And if you tell me the truth, this will not hurt you. If you lie, this will rot you, your stomach out. Okay, so it's a lie. That's a kind of a rough lie detector test. And so what that's telling us, that when a person lies, there's a hormone that our body, a chemical our body produces, and it would send that to the stomach and cause that. Now, I don't know if it's something you can rely upon, but Jen knows muscle testing, where she could tell if a child's lying through muscle testing. And she actually did that one night down at Rensselaer years ago, where some kids were goofing around, you know, as kids do. You know, kids are kids. And none of them fessed up to what the issue was. And so she said, yeah, come here. And I think there were three or four involved. And he said, did you do such and such? And, you know, the arm stayed up strong. Did you do such and such, the arm? And then one of them, you lied to me. And she could tell by the muscle testing. And the, I don't know if it's a guy or a girl, but they fessed up. So, I don't know, that's kind of a unique thing. But that shows kind of the makeup that our body is. Okay, in this case, this person was sick. A physical ailment was caused by a spiritual sin. Okay, and in the healing, you know, in emotions and stuff, from the studies we've seen that some of your emotions can be stored in certain organs of your body. Okay, like anger is often stored within your liver. So if you do a liver cleanse, you got to make sure that you're checking yourself, because you're going to be kind of, you know, agitated very quickly. I don't know if it's because of the cleanse or if it's because of the liver. And so that's one connected with kidneys or some other emotion and other things. And there's something to a lot of that stuff. And again, a person can take anything too far. And any health technique, no health technique bats 1,000. And I think the medical profession, they admit that, what is it, 2/3 of their diagnosis are wrong. So they're not batting 1,000. And then what's the third leading cause of death in America? Wrong medication. That's the third leading cause of death in America right now. Second or third, up in that range. So they're not batting 1,000 either. And so the idea is, that's why we need to pray. We need to pray when we're not feeling well, and ask the Lord for direction. Maybe he leads us to a doctor. Maybe he leads us here. Maybe he leads us there. And so we just pray and ask the Lord to guide us in these things. Nothing wrong with that, right? I mean, Asa, the guy in the Old Testament, he got gout in his feet. That's a rich man disease, gout in the feet. It's a real acidic body, and it causes real pain in their feet. And Asa, actually, it says that Asa was a good man where he did that which was right in the eyes of the Lord. But toward his death, he got this extreme bad case of gout, and it says that he sought not the Lord, but the physicians. And he suffered for 2 years after that till his death. So that's telling us the Lord wants us to seek him for everything. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart. Lean not to thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. So this fella, he said, thy sins be forgiven thee. And then 6, but there were certain of the scribes sitting there reasoning in their hearts, why doth this man thus speak blasphemies? Who can forgive sins but God only? And immediately when Jesus perceived in his spirit that they so reasoned within themselves, he said unto them, why reason ye these things in your hearts? And don't you know, that would have been a shocker. Whether is it easier to say to the sick of the palsy, thy sins be forgiven thee, or to say, arise, take up that bed and walk? Now, one of the first times I read that, I thought to myself, okay, thy sins be forgiven thee, arise, take up thy bed and walk. Well, that one's got shorter words, so that'd probably be easier. But he's obviously saying, hey, I'm God. I can do both, just like that. And so, thy sins be forgiven thee. And if the Lord read their hearts, and he's still in the heart reading business. So 10, but that ye may know that the Son of Man hath power on earth to forgive sins. He saith to the sick of the palsy, I say unto thee, arise and take up thy bed and go thy way into thine house. And immediately arose, took up thy bed, and went forth before them all, insomuch that they were all amazed, glorified God. That's the right response. That's the right response. Glorified God, saying, we've never saw it loud in this fashion. Ain't that the truth? Yeah, there we go. It's an amazing thing. Okay, now verse 10, just a side note. Son of Man is normally or usually a Jewish designation. Okay, we generally would say Son of God. So Son of Man, you'll find that phrase multiple times in Ezekiel, where he refers to himself as that. And many times in Luke, okay, Luke 19:10, for the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost. So often when you see that, and of course he had a Jewish ministry, so that would be a little hint that we're dealing with Jewish ideas there. And we just take note of that. So the Son of Man hath power on earth to forgive sins. Okay, so, okay, 12. Okay, we got a change of scene there, 13. We'll stop there. Any questions or comments while we cover? Do-do-do-do-do. Okie doke. Prayer requests that anybody might have.